Tonight, I'm joined by Karen and Brittany. Hey, guys.
Hi.
Hello.
How's it going?
Fantastic.
Excellent. Cold. Yeah, it is freezing here again for us in the Northeast United States. It is March 23rd, and it was 13 degrees this morning when I went to work. Things gross. That are not okay. Right there. Not okay. Anyway, on to some happy news. This is our book hype kind of book club episode, and we are going to be talking about Charisma by Jean Ryan. And this is the book that Karen finally chose after like a month of us harassing her. So woohoo, Karen, good job. Just so you guys know, we have chosen a May book. We originally chose it as an April book, but then I realized it didn't come out till the end of April and that wouldn't really function. But our May book will be An Ember in the Ashes by Sabaa Tahir. It's going to be fantastic, you guys. Like, seriously, I have a really good feeling about this book. I think you guys are going to love it. And that comes out April 28th. As for our April book, we'll have to get back to you because I only just realized that Ember doesn't come out to the end of April and we have to switch it. So, of course, we would love to hear your suggestions for an April book. Tell us what to read. We love it. And Karen will not be picking again for a little while, so it shouldn't take as long for us to figure it out.
Well, it's like, love that sounded you. Really mean. You're like, and Karen won't be picking for a while. Well, it's like, where's this going?
No. Karen's like, wait a minute, what? What happened? I'm just talking about choosing in a timely fashion, Karen. That's all. It's all good.
I'll do better next time.
You did okay. I mean, the book was pretty good, so I'll give you that.
Cool.
It's all good. All right, so Brittany is guesting with us this week because, well, she's got a little something to talk to us about. For those of you who listened to the last episode that Brittany was on, the last couple episodes that Brittany was on, she talked about a little book in her one-woman show. So she's going to give us an update on that and tell us what it was like to read the book. So let's get started with what we've been reading. I'll go first this time because I never go first. I read a book called Never Gonna Tell by Sarah M. Ross. It was a pretty interesting book. It's kind of meant to be like a thriller. It's about this girl who her mom moves her to a small town because they were living in Baltimore and she was concerned about the crime there. And funny enough, she's going to be this roving reporter and going to be a serious journalist. And she accidentally witnesses a murder, which is a mob hit, and happens to be one of the boys from school. It's his family, and he's there, and he finds her there. So their story kind of unfolds. It's a little bit of a thriller. It's pretty interesting. I wasn't in love with it, I have to say, but I liked it. But there were a couple things that, I don't know, it didn't 100% resonate with me. But if you like, you know, a thriller that's kind of, you know, pretty good, then I would suggest it, I guess. I don't know. It's not the highest recommendation, I guess, but it's hard to kind of sort that one out. I wasn't in love with it. There we go. Karen, how about you? What have you been up to?
I read two books this week, and the first one was Both of Me by Jonathan Friesen. And this was a really interesting, strange sort of book. It actually falls in line with a lot of the books that we've been reading lately. It's about this this girl who runs away from home, and she meets this guy who has dissociative identity disorder. So he has multiple personalities.
Well, hence, hello now.
Yeah, hence Both of Me is the name of the book. And it's sort of their path of trying to discover why he ended up that way and to fix it, and also her coming to terms with what's happened in her past. It's one of those books that I found sort of difficult to read because it's kind of on another level. I think, like Jen and Marima, you guys would probably like it. I liked it, but it was a little difficult for me to get through. And the ending was not my favorite, but at the same time, I felt like it was kind of appropriate. So it was pretty good. Definitely more of like a deep read, whereas my other book, Summer by Summer by Heather Birch, was definitely just YA romance through and through, but I really liked it. I meant to only read a couple of chapters today, and I read all 280 pages in one sitting. It's about this guy and this girl who meet up, And she's the nanny for his little brother, and he like comes home from college to Belize, and they hate each other at first, of course, and then they start liking each other as friends, blah, blah, blah. Then they get stranded on an island, and they have to work to survive together. And it sounds a little ridiculous, but the writing is phenomenal, and I could not put it down. Didn't love the ending of that one either, but it ended up, I sort of didn't like where it was going, and then by the very end of it, I did enjoy it. So if you like romance and just like fun, very light summer reads, definitely pick that one up because it was really good.
Excellent. I'm so proud that you wrote a whole book today. I know. You always say you can't do it, but yet you can.
I know. Well, I didn't have time. I still have a million other things to do, but I couldn't That's put it down. So
that is always the way. All right, Brittany, I'm ready. Tell us what you've been reading.
Well, I've read one book besides the book for this book club, which I shoved into my hectic schedule over the past 2 weeks. But the book that I read, the moment it came out, I was the first person at Barnes & Noble, first person at the register for that day. And it is Hold Me Closer, the Tiny Cooper Story, a musical novel or a novel in musical form by David Levithan. And it tells the story of Tiny Cooper. And if you read Will Grayson, Will Grayson by David Levithan and John Green, then you'll know that at the end of that book, there's a musical that happens with the character Tiny Cooper. And he stages his one-man show to tell the story of his life up until age 16. And this book was everything I dreamed and more. If there was the only thing that could have made it better is if I turned the final page and I was like hit in the face with glitter, because that's just the type of story that it is, and you want that to happen to you.
That is fantastic. I feel like we need to make a video of Brittany like finishing and getting hit in the face with glitter. Like, I feel like she deserves that completion. I'm just saying.
It is just, I wasn't sure what to expect, because you open it and it's like, it's got a note from the director, and it has like all the musical numbers are listed. And then it like goes into like all the cast of characters and like order of appearance. And he encourages like minimal actors, like don't have too many people crowding the stage. And like throughout the whole thing, because it's written like a script. So throughout the whole thing, the stage directions are rather long to like give you a sense of how Tiny Cooper's feeling while he's writing it. But he like tells you, he's like, but you know, throw in your own blocking, just have fun with it. Like, and it is so funny. But as I was reading it, on the train, and it was St. Patrick's Day. So there were a million people around me. And I'm turning the page, and one of the songs is like, oh, what a big gay baby. And it's like in huge font because it's written like a script. So there's not much on the page. And I'm like trying to hide it from all these drunk people on St. Patrick's Day on the train. And I'm like crying, laughing. It is so, so funny. And he like kind of, if you're not a big musical theater fan, I feel like a lot of it is going to go over your head just because of the very specific songs he mentions, like that he drew inspiration from and like how it should be sung. So that was a little iffy, but there is one, I'll just tell you one of my favorite musical comparisons. So at one point, Tiny Cooper is playing baseball, and this is where he meets his friend Will Grayson. And he's saying, so the song is called Second Base, and it's all about like figuring out what second base would be for like a gay guy. And they're nine, by the way. So, but he says that this should be the most homoerotically charged baseball dance number since I Don't Dance in High School Musical 2. And that is my favorite direction that he gives throughout the entire book. And it's just, it goes on to like have when he comes out to his parents, and those numbers are like it, the way he writes his father is like brilliant. And then it comes to like him telling his friend, and it's fantastic. There's a parade of like the 19 ex-boyfriends, and the ghost of Oscar Wilde is there to like talk him through not sending text messages in one number. And it is unbelievable, and it's the best thing you'll ever read. And if you really like Will Grayson, Will Grayson, you have to pick it up immediately. And I would like to create a production of this. So if anyone would like to audition, you can get in touch with me at any moment.
And she's really not kidding, you guys.
I'm really not kidding. Like, it's so good.
Like, for weeks, every time Brittany came on, weeks before the book came out, like, literally it was everything about hold me close to the tiny Cupid story. Hold me close to the tiny Cupid story. And she wasn't kidding about her one woman show, except she now realizes she cannot be all 19 boyfriends.
Yeah, so, I just can't do it.
If anyone would like to portray one of Tiny Cooper's boyfriends, you get a hold of Brittany and she will work that out.
Yeah, it is. It was so good. It was worth every bit of energy that I put into building it up. So
that's so much fun. Isn't it so great when you find a book like that and you just like can't like get out of it because you love it so much?
Yeah.
It's been a while since I've had one of those. Go ahead. Sorry.
It was great. It was so good. And I spoke with John Green this week about Paper Towns, and all I wanted to do was ask him about this book, but it was like a press circuit for Paper Towns. And I was like, no, but really, I just want to talk about Tiny Cooper.
Oh, that's so funny. So, what was I going to say to you? So you got to visit the set of Paper Towns. You really can't probably give too much away because you haven't.
No, I didn't go.
Well, not set. You got to talk to John Green about it.
I got to talk to John Green, and I got to see two scenes from the movie, in addition to the trailer. And it's going to be different than the book, but not only in details, not in story, I guess I could say. Because we didn't see the whole thing. I saw maybe a total of 7 minutes of the movie.
Yeah.
I think it's going to be good. I'm still a little iffy on the casting of Margot Roth-Spiegelman, but I don't know. We'll see how she does.
So you were always so like anti wanting to know anything about Paper Towns because you felt.
Oh, yeah. I went on a Paper Towns blackout.
I know. Made me
so unprepared to go in and talk about this. I was like, Andrew, I don't know anything from the set, or like I haven't seen any pictures. I haven't really looked at the cast since they did it. I mean, I know what Nat Wolff looks like, but
right.
So it was kind of cool to see a lot of it coming together, having not seen any of the actors really in their like, you know, full get-ups or like any of the settings that they had chosen. So it was kind of cool.
Awesome. I'm glad because I saw you say something about it. I was like, wait, I thought she was like totally boycotting until it was time. So
yeah, I unfollowed John Green on on Twitter and on Instagram just so that like, because he posts like pictures from the set, and I really didn't want to see anything because I felt like for The Fault in Our Stars, I was so absorbed into everything that he was posting that I felt like I saw the movie before I saw the movie.
Yeah, and that's pretty rough. I always hate that feeling. All right, shall we get on to the main event, everyone?
Yay, gene therapy.
All right, so let's talk about Charisma by Gene Ryan. This book is kind of, it's interesting. So let's start with our buy or borrow. Karen, it was your choice, so you get to go first.
Okay, I think I'm going to go with borrow. And that's not to say that I didn't like it, because I did, but I could definitely see why this wouldn't be for everybody. I think the highlight for me was the science and the detail behind that, but I could see why maybe that would be a little bit boring for some people. So I think I'm going to go with borrow just to be safe.
Okay. Brittany, how about you?
I'm going to have to go with borrow as well. I did enjoy it. Like Karen, I like the science behind it. And there was a whole plot on Grey's Anatomy last season that had to do with redirecting like the HIV and using it for like different things. So it was kind of cool to like already have very, very minimal entertainment exposure to knowing what was going on in this book. I think I would borrow it. I don't feel the need to go back and reread it or anything like that.
All right. I would say buy only because I think it's got some really cool concepts that are different, and we're not seeing that as much in like the YA genre. So I liked what it brought to the table. I'm not 100% sold on all of the science that they talk about, or some of the other things that are in the realm of science and stuff. But in general, I think it's a really intriguing premise, and I think that it was executed fairly well. So I would say buy, but that's just me. And I'm not shy. I don't care if it's going to offend anybody. I'm like, read the back of the book. If you can't figure out if it's going to offend you or not, then I don't know what to say. Anyway, let's get on with our chat about it. So let's talk about some of the, I guess we should probably talk about the plot first in order for everyone to kind of understand where this book is coming from. So the book is called Charisma, and it basically gives you the idea of making designer babies and designer human beings. And what I mean by that is they can use gene therapy to get rid of disease. They can test fetuses to see if they, you know, have certain types of disease and work on eradicating them. They can give gene therapy treatments to cure shyness or to make you more smart. So the whole concept within the book is this concept of gene therapy and how to manipulate our genetic code. And basically it follows the story of this girl named Aslan, and she is horrifically shy. Like, she's basically has levels of social anxiety that are through the roof. And she decides, but she's incredibly intelligent, and she's been working for a genetic company as like an intern, essentially, to earn like college credit as a high school student. And her brother has cystic fibrosis, so she's very much into the idea of gene therapy and being, you know, being open to all of that. So it kind of goes from there, and she ends up agreeing to be treated with a therapy that's supposed to allow her to be less shy. And at the same time, there are some other effects that go with it. And she's not the only one treated at that time. And it doesn't just treat for shyness. It can treat for other things as well. So what did you guys think about that kind of whole aspect of it?
That was my favorite part, to tell you the truth, mm-hmm. because I suffer from social anxiety as well, and I really connected with her about, like, the feeling of not being able to breathe and, like, how difficult it can be to go to a party and, like, talk to people. That's something that I've struggled with for a really long time, and you know, medication can help you with that and stuff like that, but the idea of there being a gene therapy that can sort of like turn that off for you is something that I'm like, well, that would be kind of awesome. So it definitely made the character a lot more relatable to me.
Awesome. Brittany, what did you think?
I really liked it. I like science-y type books, which I never thought that I would when I was younger, just because, like, you know, I never was a science person. I don't like anything like that, but I like things that are well researched. And I felt like this, I don't know much about it, so it might not have been well researched, but I think it was. And I don't know. I feel like this would speak to a lot of people. Like, if you had the option to get rid of, like, you know, when you're standing in front of a crowd and you feel all this heat rushing to your face and you feel a faint and you can't get out what you want to say, even though you can write it down in a million words, and people just want the short version and you can't deliver it. That was what I related to most. And I think that, I don't know, I think that people would really relate to Aslan, I think that's how you say her name, and how she's feeling and what she would want it for. But then they provide so many other characters that are given the same type of drug, but it's different. Like, it's different for them. Like, they seem fine on the outside, but there is something going on. And I think that covers a wide range of issues that people may not be aware of. Like, it doesn't present itself the same in everyone. And if there's one fix for everything, why wouldn't you invest in that?
Right. I mean, I think it brings up a lot of ethical questions too, which I always find really fascinating, because everybody has such a different stance on what you should and shouldn't do medically and how we should treat things. And so I think it raises a lot of really interesting questions scientifically, and like, where are the bounds of science? Are there bounds of science? And should we not do certain things? You know, and I always find those questions really fascinating. So I think that Charisma brings up a lot of those questions. And there's also this underlying theme within the book about, you know, pharmaceutical companies. Well, if we're finding cures to fix things, then, and it's a one-time deal, you take it once and you're cured, then what about all these businessmen that make a fortune off of pharmaceutical companies? And so there's a lot of ethical and really interesting questions that this book brings up that I find really fascinating. So, and the science, I think the science was pretty good. I think the one thing that I kind of had a little bit of trouble with was in the beginning when she's talking about her exposure therapy. Like, the way she's talking about it, that's not exactly how exposure therapy works. So that kind of, I was like, wait, what? What are you talking about? So, but I got past that, so it's okay.
I've never even heard of that before.
Well, exposure therapy is a real thing, but that's not how it works.
I interpreted that as, like, her friend's sort of way to get her to go to parties and stuff like that.
That's what I thought, too. I thought she just, like, made it up and was you should totally just keep trying and keep trying and keep trying.
Definitely something called exposure therapy, but it's wrong. So that's why it kind of threw me for a second, because I was like, well, wait, if she's explaining this wrong, I'm like, what happens when we get to, like, the real stuff? But I think maybe you're right. Maybe I just misinterpreted it because my brain works in a completely, like, different way, so... I have a different focus sometimes because, yeah. Anyway.
I think I was also just more like, why are you doing this to this poor girl? I know I would not want to be on the other side of someone being like, no, you have to go. You have to go. You have to go.
Social torture. All right. So let's talk a little bit about the media circus, because that's another thing that comes into play with kind of the plot. So essentially, these group of teens take this charisma treatment, and it affects each of them differently. And in fact, some of them get very sick. And so it kind of gets leaked out to the media what's happened, that they've taken this genetic treatment and that these things are happening. And prior to any of this happening, they're actually like, it's really cool because within the book, there are like these news articles kind of giving you the vibe of what's going on in the world regarding gene therapy and what people are thinking and that kind of thing. So there's a lot going on in the world itself around the gene therapy concept and that sort of thing. And there are protesters at the Nova Genetics, and there are a lot of things going on. So when they find out that these teens have been exposed to this gene therapy, they, like, everything goes crazy. Do you guys think that that's a realistic thing? Because I feel like it really is.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I felt like that was probably the part that I was like, this would definitely happen, especially when she starts, like, checking her Facebook. And at first she gets people who are, like, feeling a little sorry for her and making sure she's okay. And then she sort of gets those people that want to be friends with her that never did before. And then she starts getting, like, the crazies who want to have sex with her so that they can get charisma. And you have people who are putting her on a pedestal while at the same time people who are dragging her down. And I think that they're, you know, it sounds crazy for somebody to be like, hey, you know, I want to have sex with you because I want to have charisma inside of me too. But I swear to you, like, that would really happen because those extremes exist in the world. And just the whole media frenzy surrounding all of them stirs up those kind of crazies. So, yeah, to me, I think more than anything else, that was the part that I was like, this is really scary because it is so realistic.
Yeah, I kept thinking about the, like, NIH in Washington and, like, how there are always protests there for anything that they do. There's always protesters gathered there, because I had a friend who, like, interned there 2 summers during college, and she's just like, oh, we got to walk through. She's like, they're testing something else this week, so we got to walk through, like, all, like, these, like, picketers and, like, protesters all the time. And so it was, like, seeing the way that the media, like, wanted the people to, like, respond, and seeing Aslan in the beginning, especially, like, when she just goes online and is able to ask questions as opposed to talking to people, like, at the picnic. And this is, like, before she got the charisma. Like, the way people can present themselves online is completely different than standing in front of a camera and watching her transform and be able to, like, stand up in front of it. It was crazy. And the way they just hound her and they're coming over the bushes, and it's very, very real and very scary.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's pretty terrifying because that's how our society works. And I think social media plays such a huge role in all of that. Like, it's so easy to make a comment and be a faceless, you know, name on a computer and not have to own up to the things that you've said. So I agree. I think it's kind of scary and probably really, really realistic.
And I thought it was interesting how it dragged her family into the situation too, because of everything that was going on with her brother and with the trial that he was supposed to be going through and the way that his mom pulled him out of that. And actually, to talk about her brother just a little bit too, I really enjoyed how her brother had, what was it?
Cystic fibrosis.
Yeah, cystic fibrosis. And how he was being treated for a disease, and in a way, Aslan had one as well. And yet, it's not always seen that way because, like, anxiety is such, it's a mental health issue. And yet, they were being treated in the same way. And I think comparing those two things like that was really interesting, and seeing the way that the media was treating them both in a different way, because, okay, he has cystic fibrosis. Like, of course he needs somebody to come up with a cure for him, whereas, like, anxiety is always treated as something that you just live with or you just get over it, and people weren't treating it like she had a disease, which is very true to life.
Yes, yes, absolutely. So I did like that part. So I guess we should probably talk a little bit about, like, some of the characters too, because we keep saying, oh, the other kids, and oh, this group. So we've mentioned Aslan and kind of where she was at and what was going on with her and why she chose to kind of donate her body to science, if you will. Then we have some other characters. We have her best friend, Evie, who you guys mentioned. She's kind of pushy, but it's only meant to be the best for, you know, she's only trying to do what's right for Aslan. Did you guys think she was your typical kind of YA best friend? Did you get that vibe? Because I kind of did.
Yeah, I did.
Yeah. So, I mean, nothing, like, overwhelmingly shocking about Evie. And then we have the two kind of lead male characters. We have Jack. And how do you guys feel about Jack? I'm not going to say anything. I'm going to let you guys talk first.
I was just going to say, I think I know how you feel about Jack.
You tell me.
I liked him, but I liked him because he liked her before she changed. And that he didn't mind, like, waiting for her, and he didn't mind how shy she was. Other than that, I thought he was sort of just a very plain character. He was likable, but there was no personality to him like there was personality to Shane.
Yeah, I agree. Jack was very vanilla.
Yeah, I was going to say, he was like your, like, all-American boy, like, cookie cutout.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of the vibe I got from Jack. Like, he felt very, oh, he's so sweet, and oh, he's so nice, and of course he's going to like her no matter what, even though she's really awkward, and this is great. Like, that's, I don't know, was that too, he's very sugary. Do you know what I mean? Very sugary sweet with the whole, like, thing.
Yeah, but my favorite moment with him and Evie was when they were in her room, and they were like, yelling at her, basically.
Yeah.
I thought that was, like, the first moment where you actually saw a different side of him, and I liked it.
Yes, and that was kind of nice, too, because, again, like, otherwise, he's very just, like you said, vanilla in general. Mm-hmm. So, all right, so let's move on. Let's talk about Shane, who I think you kind of touched on there for a second, Karen. Shane is the complete opposite of Jack. He's got a lot of personality. When he hits the page, you know he's on the page. He's not just meant to be the boy she's supposed to like, kind of thing. So what did you guys think about Shane?
Oh, Shane. I'm kind of torn on him. On the one hand, I really liked him. I loved his personality. I liked that he liked her, and at first it was sort of just like a surface, like, oh, you're kind of cute, like, of course we should get together thing. But then he was, like, really genuine about it later on. But at the same time, he was, like, very forward, and he was kind of your typical guy in the beginning of the story. And until pretty much the end, I couldn't get that out of my head. So that made me very hesitant to like him. But in the end, when he died, I cried. It was really upsetting, actually. So I think I liked him more than I realized until that happened.
I knew he was going to die. I knew it.
It was so sad.
I was like, as soon as he went into the coma, I'm like, well, that's the end of him.
Yeah. So something, there's a little bit of a side effect to the charisma when people get it. And at one point, you could infect others who hadn't taken it because the virus that the gene therapy was in was still contagious. It was still active. Yeah, which isn't good. You don't ever want to do that. That's why you test very, very carefully before you give out the genetic samples. So people were getting it even though they weren't actually given the injection. They were catching it through the virus itself. So a couple of people actually died throughout this book, which is kind of sad, but it's also kind of a reality. When you go into something like this and you don't know what it is and there is no kind of norm or a lot of research or a lot of trials that it was based on, it could go very badly. And in this case, it did go badly quite a bit. So it was sad, though. Yeah. It's always sad when characters die in the book. I don't like it.
That was another thing I liked about the media reports was that there was usually like a paragraph updating you as like how many deaths, how many comas, and how many people are still alive but infected. So I was glad that we had that because, like, if you're paying attention to it, like, you could see because there were trials happening elsewhere that, like, people are dying and more people are in comas. I think there were, like, 200 people in comas by the last report.
And it made it a whole lot scarier. Like, because if it had just been focused on our little main group of people, like, even though they were going off into comas and everything like that, it wasn't super scary because I guess I assumed that most of them would be fine. And even though the other people were sort of nameless and faceless, the fact that the numbers kept going up, whether they were in comas or they were dying, definitely made the whole thing a lot more intense. The other thing I wanted to mention really quickly was the other side effect, which I actually thought was a really cool part of the book, was that they were able to better read like people's social cues and their faces and how they could sort of read emotions. I thought that was a really neat sort of almost supernatural element to it, but like there was a good reason why that was happening and it allowed them to figure out a lot of stuff, especially with the one doctor and like her mother and all of that.
Yeah, I kept thinking about that because I was wondering towards the end of reading it if that was an actual side effect or if it was because of the fact that they could actually look someone in the eye for the first time.
Oh.
Like, I feel like never before were they able to like have a conversation and be able to keep eye contact and read someone. So I don't know if it was more of a side effect or if it was just them for the first time being able to read it. Because we only really got Aslan's. I mean, she did talk about it with Shane, where she's like, you could see it too, right? But then again, I thought, I don't know.
Yeah, the only reason why I really like that idea, and I think that maybe that was part of it, but I still think that it was enhanced because her mother couldn't read the face of the doctor's mother when she was on television, and she was like, no, I don't notice anything. So I think that it was maybe made easier because they could look people in the face for the first time, but that it was still slightly enhanced because of the drug.
Yeah, I don't know. I kind of see where Brittany's coming from with it just being the first time she can actually do it. Mm-hmm. So if you've never looked at someone before, how do you know what their face looks like when they're saying a certain thing? So, but it could go either way. You can read that however you want. It's open to interpretation. All right. So let's see. So what did you guys think about the doctors in this particular book? Because they're interesting to me. They, again, present a huge ethical kind of conundrum in a sense. Because ethically, they should be protecting you and working for you and doing everything they can for you. And yet at the same time, some of their ethics are very gray. They tread a very fine line of what you should be doing and what you do. It's a very, I don't know, especially the doctor that decides to inject them without really having tested the gene therapy. So what do you guys think about that? And her father is the doctor that runs the entire corporation that is working on the genetics stuff. So what do you guys think?
I think in a lot of ways he's not any better than his daughter because he did something to his daughter. And, you know, part of me is like, well, they're only human and they want to, you know, enhance what is going on in their field. They want to push it forward. They want to discover new things. And I think, you know, part of that is just the love of science. The other part is definitely greed, though. And I think that doctors need to be held to a higher standard because they literally have lives in the palm of their hands. So it was frustrating to me to see that happening, especially, you know, because I thought that only the one doctor was doing it when it turns out that her father had done it to her and all of that. But I did like the other doctor, the one that had been like in the military, because even though she was very stern and you didn't necessarily like her right away, you knew that she had sort of like a firmer grip on her morals and she wasn't going to be swayed quite as easily. And yet she still cared about the kids a lot.
Yeah, I had a hard time actually keeping track of the doctors because at one point I was reading a doctor's name and then I'm like, wait a minute, I have no idea who this person is. And I had to go back and I was like, oh, this is a new doctor that was introduced somewhere along the line. And I got their names confused. But once I figured out who was who, I don't know. I guess they were kind of forgettable for me in a way, but I don't know. They bugged me because a lot of them seemed very pretentious and just, this was going to be their landmark case as opposed to trying to like comfort these kids.
But I think that that's in some cases a reality. I mean, in this, you know what I mean? Doubt. Like, I think that that's a fairly accurate portrayal because it's not always the doctors that are, not to say that doctors are all like this. That's not the case. I think in some case, scientists themselves can be awkward and they do very different things and they're not always sociable. It's always about what am I going to do next? How am I going to get this to work? It's a very methodic, very, you know, organized, planned out. It has a certain thing to it. It's very Sheldon Cooper. Do you know what I mean? Like there's a lot of that kind of, that's how their worlds work. That's this one focus. And so I think that was a kind of accurate portrayal because it's a big deal. You know, you come up with this new gene therapy and not all the kids drop dead and it enhances some things. And if you tweak this and tweak that, then maybe it'll work for everybody. And I mean, that's just the way it works, sadly, in that world. I don't like it, but what are you going to do? All right. So Karen, why don't you tell us about the twist with the doctor?
Okay.
Well, we're talking about doctors.
Yes. So obviously, the doctor that gave them all charisma, she ran away because she's a coward, and they faked her death, or she faked her death, her and her mother, I guess, and turns out that she's still alive, that she was still conducting research, that she wanted to find a not just a cure for it, but a way to have them keep the charisma so that maybe she wouldn't be in such big trouble as she was. And I thought this was really interesting. I kind of had a feeling, though, from pretty early on that she wasn't dead, just because, one, that was their biggest lead to getting the cure. Two, because she was being filmed, like, jumping off the cliff or whatever it was. And I'm like, okay, so who's filming it? That part was kind of like a big red flag to me. And also, as soon as Aslan started being suspicious of the mother, I was like, yeah, she's hiding her. She knows exactly where she is. So I kind of wish it had been a bigger twist, but I'm glad that they went in that direction and she was maybe held a little bit more accountable and that we ended up seeing her true colors in the end because she was a little scary when they finally like came face to face outside the cabin.
Yeah, I like the brawl. Like, I was glad that there was, like, a physical fight
yeah.
following, like, the There are a lot of physical, like, dangers, too, though. She had to, they were, like, fighting off, like, those two kidnappers who took them and, like, drained them of their blood. And then there was the whole, like, that with fighting the lead, like, geneticist who was working on it. Like, I was like, oh, this is very violent. I was not prepared for it. Like, it turned, I felt like, it reminded me a lot of Grasshopper Jungle, where the first half you're like, oh, we're just dealing with this tiny little infestation of genes being manipulated. There are a couple grasshoppers, but no one cares. And then all of a sudden, like, this whole world implodes and, like, you come out of the ground and it's just, like, gene therapy everywhere. I don't know if anyone's read Grasshopper Jungle on here, but.
Oh, Karen has.
Yes. Yep.
Yeah. It's terrifying.
It was.
And gross.
Yes.
But this was better than Grasshopper Jungle, just because it was less gross.
Not as scary as actual grasshoppers taking over.
No.
This is so funny. All right. So let's see. What else do we have to talk about? Oh, so let's talk about the ending. So in the end, charisma becomes a street drug. So, yeah, that's pretty intense. If you think about that, it's more dangerous in many ways because it could instantly, I mean, it could kill you. You could, by taking it, you could have an automatic death sentence. But if you take it and survive, then you become an entirely different person who, you know, maybe those flaws that you thought you had, well, now you'll be able to function better because they'll be taken care of by charisma. So, what are you guys feeling about that?
That ending was pretty intense, I think, because it's so scary that everybody pretty much, I mean, I'm assuming this whole story got national attention and that everyone pretty much knew basically what was going on. I'm sure they kept, like, a lid on some of the details, but the story was out there and people definitely knew who Aslan was and what she had done and all of that. And the fact that these kids are buying the street drug and everything, I'm just like, how stupid are you? But at the same time, I thought that was really realistic. And especially since, you know, people always want to improve themselves. And this is clearly a very new type of drug. It's not just a drug that, you know, will, like, chill you out or make you, like, super hyperactive. Like, it actually changes who you are. And my favorite part was when she was struggling with it in the end. She had it in the palm of her hand, and she was like, man, you know, I really miss that rush of feeling like I did before. And if I take this, you know, I could have all that back again. But she really fought against it, and she was like, no, you know, I made that mistake once before. I'm not going to do it again. I need to learn to live with what I have and use, I guess, like, the remnants of what was left over and sort of turn my life around on my own, which I think was a really strong statement.
Yes.
Yeah, I like being left with the fact that, like, that's going to be a constant threat for her because she's only 17.
Right.
Like, it's going to be around forever and she's going to be faced with it in college and
so it's going, like, a different year kind of addiction.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? It, now she's basically someone who has to deal with not only her, like, social awkwardness and stuff, but she also has to deal with this constant. It's almost like getting high when you become that person that's so comfortable and it feels better about everything and can function in society or in social situations. So that's what's addicting about it for her, whereas someone else it might be something different. But yeah, that is a really fascinating way to look at it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and I think that was another reason why I liked it too, is because she got quote unquote cured, but there's still consequences for her for what she did. The fact that she is sort of addicted to it and she has to struggle with that for the rest of her life. So it wasn't a clean cut ending with, you know, oh, everybody's happy now and everyone's cured. Like, there's still that threat out there, like you were saying, Brittany, which I think, again, is probably what would happen in a situation like this.
Yeah, I find the whole thing really interesting. I think it was kind of really well executed in the way it makes you look at things and examine them and kind of strike up a conversation about it. So I like it. So if there were a therapy out there that could change your worst trait or something that made you feel uncomfortable, would you take it? That's a loaded question. I know, right? Well, Karen, you talked about social anxiety in the beginning, so this is something that, you know.
Yeah, I know. And ever since I read this book, I was sort of asking myself the same thing, actually, because I did get to interview Jean Ryan, who's the author. And I asked if you were offered something like charisma, would you take it? And she said that, I'll just quote her right here because it's short. She said, after thinking about this a lot, I've concluded that as a teen, I would not have. Too threatening for a kid who felt as though she had little control of her life. However, as an adult, I'd probably give it a try if it were proven to be completely safe. I'd love to see what extroversion looks like. And I was like, if it was proven to be completely safe, it would be nice to not walk around and be afraid all the time of, like, you know, social interactions and all that kind of thing. Could really change your life around. But at the same time, I would always feel like it's cheating in a way. And I would always sort of, I don't know, maybe I'm just stubborn, but I sort of want to do it myself. So I don't think I would take it. Yeah, ooh, I'm going to go with that.
And I agree with Karen 100%, only because I would feel like I wasn't doing enough. Do you know what I mean?
Right.
Like, I always feel like I'm not doing enough, and that would make it feel even worse to where, like, oh, I couldn't do it, so I had to take it. Like, it would be, like, more like a failure as opposed to, like, stumbling over my words. Do you know what I mean? If we're talking solely about just, like, a social thing.
Right. And I want to say, like, this does not apply to medication for anybody.
Oh, yeah. No. I'm only talking about,
this is not going for, like, a gene. Of the book.
Exactly.
Yeah, gene therapy, something completely
medication is not very there. Important if you have, you know, mental health issues and stuff. I take medication for my anxiety, and once I did that, I can't even tell you, like, how much changed my life. So it's definitely a very good thing, but I feel like changing your genes is just that one step that maybe is just a little bit too far. You know, this is sort of a huge thing. And in that interview with Jean, she said that this whole debate that we're talking about right now is not as far off as you might think. She says, just last month, the British House of Commons voted to approve the genetic modification of embryos to replace faulty mitochondrial DNA. So, this is happening.
Well, yeah, they talk about, they call them designer babies. Basically, you can have a baby and tell them what you want the phenotype, which is how it looks. You know, you can say, I want my child to have this color eye. I want them to have this. Because certain, you know, there's dominant and recessive traits and stuff. So if you want your child to have blue eyes, you have to have no dominant traits. They have to receive two recessive traits in order to have them, which is not necessarily an easy thing to do. You know what I mean? Depending. So, but you can go in and you can say these things, and that debate has come up a lot, because why are you choosing that? Why can't you just let your child be who they are? So there's a lot of debate around that too. And there's a lot of conversation about, you know, because we talk about in vitro fertilization and all of those things, which are wonderful for people who need that sort of thing. But how far is too far when you're manipulating an embryo? Right. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like,
there's
some ethical questions that are definitely valid.
And it's such a fine line, you know, because she says in this interview as well, you know, there's hope for treating diseases like cancer and AIDS, which, so you would want this technology for that sort of thing. But then again, how far would somebody take it, and how dangerous could it end up being to just go in and, you know, completely rewrite somebody's DNA? Like, that's terrifying on a lot of different levels.
Right. And, like, right now, I think one of the biggest conversational pieces is, like, autism. Autism happens, you know, the numbers always fluctuate, but it's, like, one in every 70, I think, is what one of the latest numbers was. That's obscene. Mm-hmm. That number is out of control. Nothing has moved that fast. Nothing. So now, and it's a huge range. You know, autism takes on many different you know, parts of a spectrum, and some of them are really drastic and some of them you can barely notice. But at the same time, it's very much prevalent within our society at this point in time, especially in younger children. And it's so, like, for every classroom in a school, there may be 5 students within a classroom that are autistic or that have some, you know, part of the spectrum. And so now how do you teach that? How do you teach that? So if you can find a way to eradicate autism through genetics, do you do it? Do you know what I mean? Like, there's so many questions that go into that, especially because, I mean, the reason I brought up autism, because A, it's very prevalent. It's something I work with a lot. So that's, and it's definitely one of those things that people keep saying, oh, it's genetics, but they haven't really identified what it is, to be truthful. You know, there's a lot of speculation on what it could be related to, but they haven't. So if they figure it out, how do you then handle it and move forward? Because if they're changing mitochondrial DNA within a fetus, that's pretty serious. That's pretty heavy duty stuff that they're doing.
Yeah. So. Like, this is everywhere. You just have to, it's like one of those things, like, once you see one ant, you're going to see a lot of ants.
Yeah.
Like, because this made me think of, like, I was saying earlier when we first started talking about it, like, there was an episode of the whole plot line of Grey's Anatomy last season with Bailey was that she was working in the genome lab working on, she broke apart, like, the HIV sequence and then, like, reassembled it so that she could deliver different things into people's bodies. And there was this kid who was literally allergic to everything. Like, he had to be in a bubble and, like, nothing was making him better. And she injected him with, like, the HIV carrier, not the disease, but, like, the carrier to deliver things to his DNA to, like, make him healthy. And it was do we want to change his gene sequence in order to do this and risk infecting him with something different that they can then need to decode in a different way? And, like, her research was constantly threatened to be shut down.
Yeah. And I think that's the way it is in a lot of, you know, research facilities. There's such a fine line ethically what you're allowed to do and how you're allowed to do it. And, you know, it depends. It's such, I don't know. So the best thing about this book is that it really makes you think and question some more and, you know, maybe be curious about all the different research that's going on in the world right now regarding genotyping and how it works and stuff like that.
Did you say whether you would take charisma or not?
Oh, I didn't. I'm not really shy, so the jury applies to me.
For maybe something else, then?
For maybe something else, yeah. I don't know. If it was proven safe, then I would consider it.
Depending on what it was. You wouldn't take it in the basement of some lab.
No, I wouldn't. I wouldn't be picking it up off the street. No. But, like, scientifically, like, I, you know, I've studied a lot of science. I have a lot of science background. So I think part of that plays into my decision making because I know it has to go into a drug in order to make it legalized, in order to make it something that's no longer a trial and something that is on the market. There's a lot that goes into it. So in order to get it that far, it has to be fairly safe. So I would say maybe, depending on what my issue was. I'm sure we can pick one. There's got to be at least 5, I'm sure. But we'll figure it out. I'm not shy, but there's something. All right. So, listeners, why don't you tell us, do you think you would take the charisma drug for whatever it is that ails you? You can choose. All right. So, ladies, do you have anything else for this episode?
Auditions. Hit me up. Karen's already playing the ghost of Oscar Wilde, though, so.
It's happening.
You can apply for ex-boyfriend 1 through 19.
And I have no idea what's going on, so this will be interesting.
This is going to be amazing. I think we'll just all have to get together on a weekend. Brittany can instruct. It'll be amazing.
Oh, great. I can't sing. Is that a problem?
New York area.
No. It'll make it even better.
Okay. And I'm in.
Do it to, like, an upbeat, like, Sondheim-y type thing where, like, you can, like, talk really fast through it. That way you're not actually singing, but it's kind of sing-songy.
Do that.
Oh, yeah. We got it.
Oh, boy. It's going to be out of control, kids. Out of control. So hit at Brittany Lovely Up on Twitter. Let her know which role you would like. And she will work on her casting sessions. It'll be great. So until next time, I'm Jen.
I'm Brittany.